Thanks to Chow for the invitation. It's great to be here. This is a really nice institute. So the new result in this talk, it is really both modular and Katz-Moody. But I don't want to focus too much on those things. The techniques for this result is already new in the case of when it's not positive characteristic, and already for finite flag varieties. So what I want to do is first give you an overview of the shape of the results that I want, and then I will try to make it really concrete in the case of SL2, which is definitely not Katz-Moody. Okay, so let me first describe this duality at the decategorified level. The input here is a Coxeter system. And you can think this is the Weyl group together with the, some indexing set for the simple roots. And from this data, you can define what's called a Hecke algebra. So let me remind you and also tell you what the normalization I'm going to use is. My indeterminate will be V, and it's an algebra over this Laurent polynomial generated by symbols called H sub S for simple reflections S. And this is modulo some relations, of which there are two types. First, you have the braid relations. And then you have a quadratic relation, which under the normalization I care about, looks like this. Okay. A basic fact about this algebra is that it has a basis called a standard basis. So as a module over this Laurent polynomial ring, as a basis, called HW, this is called a standard basis. And if you specialize V is equal to 1, then this gives you back just a group algebra of your Coxeter group W. So under this correspondence, HW just goes to W. Of course, this is the direct sum of Z W. And so you can see this quadratic relation, when you said V equals to 1, is just saying S squared is equal to the identity. Okay. Now, this Hecke algebra also has what's called the Kajan-Lustig basis. And there are actually two flavors of this. So if you look at the original papers of Kajan and Lustig, they define one basis called CW prime and another one called CW. And I want to write them BW and TW. In this normalization, for example, BS for a simple reflection S is HS plus V, and TS is equal to HS minus V inverse. Now, what one can see from this presentation of the Hecke algebra is that there's a very natural ring involution you can define. Let me call it tau. This is defined by sending HS to HS, but it's not linear in V. It sends V to minus V inverse. So this exchanges So it clearly exchanges BS and TS. And actually, the way that these BW and TW bases are defined is sort of inductively starting from these BSs. And so it this involution really exchanges BW with TW. Let me observe something about this involution. If you set B is equal to 1, there's no way of completing the following diagram. And you can see this very easily. V here goes to minus V inverse, so 1 goes to minus 1. Okay. So somehow this the deformation of the Hecke algebra is revealing some self-duality that you didn't see before in just in the group algebra. Yeah. Can't forget V. So what I want to do is a categorification of this story. So I want to define some monoidal category whose Grothendieck group is this Hecke algebra. And the input for this is not just the Coxeter system, but a little bit more. So now in addition, you need what's called a realization. Now what this is it's a representation of W. Let's just to simplify things, let me say this is over a field. K. Field of characteristic might be zero or positive. And you also specify what you think of as roots and co-roots. So roots inside the dual of H. And co-roots inside H, indexed by the simple reflections. So a natural way that this sort of data arises is if you start with a reductive group. Let's say G is a complex reductive group, and you take a Borel and a maximal torus. Then from this data, you get the Weyl group. And this acts on, so there was a field K involved here, but so the way this shows up is this acts on H, which is the base change to K of the character lattice. Okay. So here there's a natural notion of roots and co-roots making H into a W representation. And starting from this data, now let me not tell you the definition of this Hecke category, but just introduce a symbol for it for now. So this now depends not only on W, but on this realization H. And what this will be is a K-linear graded additive monoidal category. So when you take the split Grothendieck group, what I mean by graded is that there's some grading endofunctor. And this turns into multiplication by V. And the additive and monoidal structures give you the ring structure. So this naturally makes it into a split growth into a an algebra over Laurent polynomials. And inside here, there are indecomposable objects indexed by your Coxeter system, whose class in the Grothendieck group we'll call BWP. So this P is the characteristic of my field. And it really does depend on this realization, on the characteristic of this field K. This BW, depending on P, is what's called a P-Kajdan-Lustig basis. And there's an emerging philosophy that, just like Kajdan-Lustig theory controls many parts of characteristic zero representation theory, that this basis should control modular representation theory. And if P is equal to zero, then this agrees with the original Kajdan-Lustig polynomial. But somehow to define this positive characteristic version, unlike for the Kajdan-Lustig polynomial, which you could define at the just the level of the Hecke algebra, you need some categorification. But again, I don't want to focus too much on the fact that this P exists. For SL2, everything involved will be, this is exactly going to be the same basis as the characteristic zero basis. OK, so let me tell you one geometric incarnation of the second category. So here I'm assuming that this data W and H arises in the way that I wrote up here from a reductive group over C. Then I can, one way of defining this is some category of constructible sheaves, DB, that are Borel equivariant. And I take coefficients in this field K. And this is a subcategory of parity sheaves. Now, I also don't want to say too much about this, but in characteristic zero, so if P is equal to zero, then this is exactly semi-simple complexes. So direct sums of shifts of intersection cohomology sheaves on the Schubert varieties. So this category, of course, has direct sum and direct sums, and the shift that I was writing, parentheses one, corresponds to the cohomological shift in the derived category, and the monoidal structure comes from the fact that I'm taking Borel equivariant on G mod B, and so there's a convolution product. So in this geometric language, this p-canonical basis, you can see as encoding the the stalks of certain indecomposable parity sheaves on the flag variety. Okay, so getting back to the natural question here is, can you categorify this involution? What one might naively wish, and this is not true, is that there's a monoidal self-equivalence, auto-equivalence of this category. Let me call it K for Kuzio. Some monoidal equivalence, so that when you take the Grothendieck group, you get exactly this tau. So remember I said this sends BS, or a simple reflection S to TS, which let me write in the following funny way. It's BS minus B inverse. And B goes to minus B inverse. It's really easy to see actually that this is not possible as written. So let me make two remarks. First is, well, so there was an object called BS inside the Hecker category, which actually gave you this basis element BS. But not every element of the Hecker algebra can arise as a Grothendieck, a class in the Grothendieck group of an actual object. It has to be some positive linear combination of the BWs. So in this case, the fact that there are these minus signs already tell you that this sort of duality can't exist. So the usual fix is these minus signs tell you you have to go to complexes. You should take the bounded homotopy category of the Hecker category. And so this is a related observation to this fact I mentioned about already on the Grothendieck group level. This equivalence should be triangulated. So the cohomological shift should go to cohomological shift. But the fact that V goes to minus V inverse tells you exactly that one, this shift that was already inside the Hecker category, should go to, at least this says, minus V inverse. Okay. So that means that, again, if you forget this V, forget this gradient shift, then you can't complete the diagram. This really is some duality that you only see with this additional grading.
Are you working in the derived category, the geometric incarnation? Why do you need to introduce more complexes?
Right. So that's a good point. So this is a complex of complexes. And so we have this double grading. And yeah, so it really comes down to this fact that if you try to define a category that only has one grading, then such an equivalence cannot exist.
I mean, maybe an answer that you would like is, you know, those are perverse sheaves, you can also think of them as D modules. And D modules have this extra structure, which is Hodge theory. And this is some low-tech way of not saying like that he's using Hodge theory.
Awesome.
That's right, yeah. So there's, well, if K is C or QL bar, then there's some natural geometric way of defining these bi-graded categories in terms of either using Hodge modules or you can use mixed perverse sheaves. But that really, for example, mixed perverse sheaves really depend on the fact that you're using a tau topology and in positive characteristic coefficients. And so this is some way of cooking up what should be called the mixed derived category with positive character positive coefficients. So this is mixed modular derived category. And this is an idea due to two of the authors, Achar and Leash.
Right.
Yeah.
I've lost track of the logic so far.
Yes.
So you said, I understood that you said the only way I could hope to have this kappa is if I give myself an extra grading.
Mm-hmm.
So the first grading I had would be V, and the second grading would just be -1.
That's right.
Now, are you telling us we can do it, or is this still in the wishful thinking world?
This is still in the wishful thinking world. And the explanation will come maybe in 25 minutes from now.
Okay.
But when you say that if K has characteristic zero, then that's fine, right?
Even if K has characteristic zero with this, yeah, as written, this is K still cannot be true. Well, you need to take some quotient of H. You need to pass to be constructible sheaves as opposed to be equivariant sheaves. I'll get to that in a second.
So when you say categorical grading, right? So it already has two gradings.
What? So, yes. Here, yes.
When you go, so H already had two gradings, right?
H already.
No.
H only has one grading.
But
I mean, H had this B.
What mean then?
-1 only makes sense when you pass to this homotopy category.
But you're already mapping down to HW.
Right, so this is the part of wishful thinking. Yeah, so this is really not true.
But there was already wishful thinking then?
No, that is true.
In the K theory, you've only had on negative things. It's formally,
but they're not. Ah, not as complex as just formally.
Yeah. Yeah.
If K has characteristic zero, what is the definition of the category in this case?
You can define it as mixed perverse sheaves on be constructible mixed perverse sheaves on the flag variety, well, or maybe just a semi-simple object inside that.
It's an abelian category.
It's a well, here I'm really thinking of it just as the additive category, the full additive subcategory spanned by.
You don't allow complexes. You don't allow.
I'm not allowing complexes here. These parity sheaves are only.
You wrote there. I see shifted by.
Yeah, so it's really just direct sums, not non-trivial extensions of these.
With arbitrary shifts.
What's that?
But direct sums with arbitrary shifts.
Direct sums of arbitrary, direct sums of these, of ICs.
But with shifts or without shifts?
With shifts.
But is it just that these shifts are, because it's some purity, so shifting there is the same as some kind of shifting in the Hodge structure?
Exactly, yeah. So maybe I should expand on this philosophy a little bit. So if you have a mixed perverse sheaf, then you have a canonical weight filtration. And what you're doing is you can use the subquotients of this weight filtration to get a complex, this is some complex that encodes only the extension data of nearby subquotients of this filtration. Right, and so these subquotients are pure sheaves. And this is some philosophy due to Zorgel that these parity sheaves are exactly the right analog of pure sheaves in positive characteristic.
Right, but I'm confused about, you said that something is not known in characteristic zero, so can you say it again? What is not known?
Yes, even this definition is, already the fact that you can define mixed perverse sheaves in this way just by using, this is the work of Achar and Riesch. The thing I was saying in the beginning was that, this quasi-duality result in positive characteristic was not known before for Katz-Moody groups.
Still catches. So suppose you have a characteristic zero, then what is actually written here? So you have,
so yes. So what's written here is, so okay, this is still part of the fantasy. This is still wishful thinking.
But can you just...
Yeah, so in characteristic zero is some sort of mix, well, some full subcategory of a mixed constructible derived category. GB, so this is QL bar. G mod B is now over FP. And there's some self-derived equivalence like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you want, this you have, right?
This, yeah, this, I mean, this is BGS.
Instead of that, you want to
We want some.
But how is it different from what you want to have?
Yeah, we want some analog of this where, well, so first of all, you have to make sense of this definition where now instead of QL bar, you're allowed to take any field.
Right, no, but that's what I meant by characteristic zero.
Uh-huh.
I mean, but they're saying that if you still consider QL bar coefficients, do you want some different statement there or not?
No, this statement should, I mean, the corrected statement.
This is what I meant by characteristic zero. I mean, if you do, by characteristic zero, I mean coefficients of characteristic zero.
Yes, the coefficients, yes, that's right, yeah.
And I totally get it, because you said in characteristic zero, you want some different statement of what is known.
No, it's the same statement.
But you said that something was not known in characteristic zero.
Something was not.
I don't. You said that there's some conjecture that you don't know even in characteristic zero.
No. The thing I said in the beginning was it's known and true in characteristic zero. The statement is only true for both Katz-Moody and positive characteristic coefficients. Yeah. Yeah, so maybe I should emphasize that again, in this geometric incarnation of the Hecke category, I'm taking G mod B just over C and looking at the analytic topology and taking these parity sheaves, whatever they are, with coefficients in this field K. So the modular really is about the coefficients. It's some way of not referring to the et al. Topology to still make sense of this mixed category.
Further, you don't have to erase a lot of work.
You can use the other half, it's fine.
Okay. Okay, so what I wanted to observe here was that this sort of homological pattern is what one observes in quasi-duality. So in classical, In classical quasi-duality of algebras, well, the first example is you take a vector space and you can consider two rings. The symmetric algebra of V, so this is a polynomial ring, and the exterior algebra of V dual. And these rings are both naturally graded. So what one can do is take graded modules. And quasi-duality says that there's a derived equivalence between these two categories. So I should put some finiteness to conditions, should be finitely generated graded modules. But again, this is triangulated. One goes to one.
DB, right?
If I put some finiteness conditions, I think it's okay.
Right, I think his point was DB is probably not the right finiteness condition.
Oh, you want these?
It's not finite.
Right, like DB on one side goes to perfect on the other.
Yeah, okay. Yes, I should. There should be some other decorations. Is that okay? But once again, there's another functor on each of these categories called just shift term-wise the grading of the complex, and this doesn't, this gets taken to something else. Okay. So once again, you can't complete a diagram like this. So somehow this additional grading this Kozio grading reveals some hidden relation. And so what this in this wishful thinking, what we're saying is, well, wouldn't it be nice if there was a hidden self-duality of the second category? So now let me tell you what the actual statement is. In the actual duality, there need to be two changes made. First of all, we can't use the Hecke algebra, the Hecke category itself. We need to take some quotient of this category. And at the level of Grothendieck group, they are both the Hecke algebra. But whereas the Hecke category was monoidal, this quotient is only a module category for the Hecke category. And down here, it becomes just a regular module, the Hecke algebra acting on itself. And geometrically, what this is you, right, so this corresponds to, originally I had B equivariant parity sheaves on G mod B with K coefficients. But what I can do is forget the B equivariance. And there's a functor that lands you in just B constructible sheaves. So the indecomposable objects are actually in bijection, but the Homs are different. And this constructible category is a module category. Still under B convolution on the right.
So what's the geometric definition of the introduction of the brackets?
So this is B. So this is a smooth along the Borel stratification. But I'm not requiring B equivariance as a data.
So this is a full subcategory of D modules in G mod B without equivariance?
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And two, this duality will exchange. So in this definition of a realization, I had roots and co-roots. And what one can do is take the Langlands dual realization, where the roots and co-roots are switched. So let me give you the rough form of our theorem. Is that there's a triangular equivalence. Okay. some triangulated autoequivalence of the bounded homotopy category of this quotient of the Hecke category. And it has the exactly the desired effect. So BW will go to some objects on the Langmuir's dual side. So I should check. Called tilting objects. Okay. And it behaves in the way that I described with the shifts. Okay, so I still haven't categorified this involution. I'm really missing this monoidal picture. So that's the next theorem. Sorry?
Did you say what the quotient was, or did you just say it exists?
No, geometrically, so this quotient is you're taking B-constructible parity sheaves as opposed to B-equivariant parity sheaves.
In characteristic zero, what then?
In characteristic zero, so semi-simple complexes, B-equivariant semi-simple complexes versus B-constructible semi-simple complexes. So the HOMs are different. There's for example, if you look at this, there's a smallest Schubert stratum, which is just a point, and you can look at the one-dimensional vector space supported there, which is it is a parity sheaf, and you can compute the x in these two categories, and in the constructible world you get just one dimension, but the x in the B equivariant category will pick up a polynomial ring, the
cohomology of BG.
Yeah, that's right, the cohomology of BG. I mean, the cohomology of the B equivalent cohomology of a point.
So the
cohomology of BP.
On the flag manifold.
Sorry.
The shifts on the flag manifold.
Yeah, there's a pulse of carrier between the flag manifold.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some nice conditions that all be locked.
Okay, so let me draw the following diagram. Okay.
Yes. So that is the sort of thing that seems like the duality.
Yeah. Sorry, maybe I should have used that word, but I didn't dare. Okay, so here's a question you can ask. Theorem 1 tells you there's a, so I should put HW. There's an equivalence like this, and up here, you can put the original Hecke category without the quotient, which is now a monoidal category. Okay. So this, you have a forgetful functor, and it still acts on this regular module category. I mean, the category is not the same, but. So now you can ask, is there some category up here, some monoidal category that fits into a diagram like this? So that the top row is a monoidal equivalence. And this is what we do. But because of a reason that I'll explain very concretely in SL2, you can't put the Hecke category itself. So this is where you need this category called the free monodromic sheaves. So maybe you might call this the free monodromic Hecke category. Okay, so that's the shape of our theorems. And let me now try to make this very concrete in the case that everything comes from geometry, and in fact, everything is happening on P1. So when the group G is SL2. But I actually don't even want to do that. I want to give you some more combinatorial / algebraic incarnation of these this Hecke category. Okay, so this is G is SL2.
So what's the relation between category O and this category system?
Yeah, so this quotient really is the derived category of category O. Well, the derived category of graded category O.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something bi-graded. And you can think of the second category as the projective functors. Okay, so this is the theory of Zorgo bimodules. Okay. Our input data, the Coxeter system is just S2, so you have the identity and S, which squares to the identity. And this acts on H, our realization, which is one-dimensional. And let me suggestively call this. So yeah, imagining that this comes from SL2, it's spanned by alpha S check, a coroute. And so H is spanned by alpha S with the usual pairing. And S does what you expect. Sends alpha S to minus alpha S, and also same for the check. Okay. So these actions induce an action of W on the following wings. Let me say R is the symmetric algebra of H dual. So very concretely, this is just a polynomial ring in alpha S. And same on R check, which is a symmetric algebra on H. Sorry, this is H dual. Okay, and let me assume that the characteristic of K is not equal to 2. Okay. Now here is another definition of the Hecke category in this case. You can define H for this realization as, so it's called Zorgo bimodules for this input data. And so this will be some full subcategory of the category of graded bimodules over this polynomial ring R. And it's something very easy to describe. You take a special bimodule called BS, which will be R tensored over R over the S invariants. So of course this is, so here I'm looking at a polynomial ring in alpha S squared. Those are exactly the invariants. And so I said graded module, and let me put a grading shift down by one. And starting from this object, what you do is you allow grading shifts, tensor product over R, direct sum, and direct summoned. So this definition works for any realization, but in this SL2 case, it's very easy to describe what the objects are. Okay, indecomposable objects for W is equal to S2 is, well, so I'm allowing also the empty tensor product. So R, the monoidal unit, is in this category. BS is in this category. And according to this definition, what I'm supposed to do is take objects that are already in my category and start tensoring them together and see what new objects I get. Okay, so let me do a key computation. what is BS tensor with itself? Well, if I write this concretely, I'm tensoring three copies of R over the S invariance with a shift of 2. Now, this middle factor of R, I only really care about it as R S bind module. And so I can break this up into the even degree polynomials and the odd degree polynomials. Sorry, so I actually forgot to say something that I grade both of these rings, R and R check, by saying that alpha S and alpha S check are degree 2. So that's why this 2 appears. Minus 2. Okay, so now if I just distribute, you see that I get R tensor R over RS, but I get 2 copies with some shifts. And they are exactly BS, the shift of -1, and BS, the shift of 1. So this relation exactly categorifies the quadratic relation. So BS squared is equal to V plus V inverse times BS is another way of writing the quadratic relation.
Wasn't there a 1, 2?
Sorry, where?
Sorry, I'm remembering without for H.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so you have to rewrite that original one in terms of HS in terms of BS, but this is what you get. Okay, and I'm interested in complexes of these things. So let me tell you some maps between these indecomposable objects. So what this computation tells you is you don't get any additional indecomposable object up to shift in this category for S2. All the objects in Zorgo bimodules is really just R and BS, and grading shifts of those, direct sums of those. Okay, here are some maps. Now from BS, we can define a map to R called multiplication. So F tensor G goes to FG. And there's also a map in the other direction, a slightly different grading shift. Sending 1 to this is some co-multiplication. And let me normalize it like this. A half of alpha S tensor 1 plus 1 tensor alpha S. So these are actually the only maps up to scalar between these two indecomposable objects. And I'm using these funny symbols, but they're just symbols for me. Okay, so now I can explain why we needed this free monodromic category. So remember this.
An analog of H, not H bar.
An analog of.
The category, not the quotient.
That's right. At the moment, this is a monoidal category. This is H, not H bar. So let's ask what should categorify. This element TS, which was BS minus V minus V inverse. Well, this was supposed to be the image of BS under quadrivality. And well, if you write down these maps, you can convince yourself that actually the only thing it could be, if it were possible, is that it has to be this complex R goes to B, S goes to R, exactly using these two maps. But there's an issue here. So one in this composition goes to alpha S, which is not zero. So this complex really doesn't exist in the homotopy category of the Hecke category. So in theorem one, we took some quotient to obtain an actual equivalence of categories. So let me explain what this quotient is in this very, very concrete example. Okay, this quotient, or S-bin quotient, has the same objects as S-bin, but I kill alpha S in the HOM. So the HOM, the graded HOM in this quotient between two bimodules, let's say B and B prime. This is by definition, you take the HOM in Zorgo bimodules, and then you say multiplication by higher degree polynomials on the left-hand side are zero. Okay, so this has exactly the effect of making this desired complex into a genuine complex. This complex, which is TS, it's really an object in the homotopy category of this quotient. Okay. So very explicitly in this SL2 case, what you're saying is there's some non-trivial triangulated self-equivalence of this category that exchanges just BS sitting in cohomological degree zero with this funny complex TS, this three-term complex TS.
As a matrix factorization. I mean, that's a perfectly nice one.
If you can think of this as a matrix factorization.
Like a complex, a Zmo2 graded complex whose square is a perfect function.
I mean, I guess in this case, but in general, you get complexes that are not too periodic.
Okay.
Let me say just a little bit about the idea of proof. Okay, so what I'm looking for is some equivalence like this. And one has a check. Okay. Now, so S-bin was defined using modules over this polynomial ring R. So even after I quotient on one side the HOMs by higher degree polynomials, you can still multiply on the other side by polynomials in R. So what that gives me is, I probably shouldn't, it's, yeah, on every object there is some endomorphism indexed by these polynomials. And the way in which, and these are graded using this grading shift 1. So this is just acting term by term. So of course, on this other side, these Zorgo bimodules are defined in terms of the Langlands dual polynomial ring, R check. But that's not the, so if you were to believe this Kozyu duality equivalence, then you should expect another action of a polynomial ring. R should act, but now through some combination of shifts like this. And the obvious action here by multiplication turns into what we call the monodromy action. So I don't have time to discuss why, but inventing this action was a key step in the proof of this theorem.
Still the SL2 case, or did you tell us that there was like a Zorgel bimodule description in general, or?
There's a Zorgel bimodule description for finite flag varieties.
Okay.
Yeah, for affine, there are some technical difficulties. You can't use this Zorgel presentation. But there's, in the end, our theorem is proved by generators and relations. And so there's a diagrammatic monoidal category that one can define just starting from a Coxeter system and a realization. So this is a work of Ben Elias and Jordi Williamson. And when geometry exists, this category really is always the same as parity sheaves. And so this is the thing that you should use instead of Zorgel bimodules.
So can you say what goes wrong in the Katz-Moody case?
In the Katz-Moody case, well, essentially it's that you can't use just the polynomial ring to understand these sheaves.
You do have under one direction, because if you have a sheave on a flag variety, you can consider this equivariant sheave. You can consider this equivariant cohomology, and you do get a bimodule, right?
Yes.
So.
Yeah, so you do get a bimodule, but the functor is it's faithful but not full. You actually need to use the whole Nil-Hecke algebra, not the polynomial rings.
Right.
Okay, so let me, I realize I don't have much time. So I think the following is an interesting construction that might interest people more generally, even if they're not interested in closure duality. So let me explain a construction called left monodromic complexes. This will be some category that's equivalent to the homotopy category of Zorgel modules, but one where you can more readily see this monodromy action. Okay. The definition of this quotient of the Hecke category was that you start with Zorgel bimodules, and then you just quotient the Homs on the left-hand side like this. Okay. But the idea is to realize that this is sort of a very brute way of taking a quotient. And what one should do is really, you should take a resolution of this trivial module and tensor with that instead. So. And there's a very nice resolution, the Kozier resolution. Okay. And so whatever this category is this left monodromic category. And it will come with a forgetful functor that's actually an equivalence with Zorgel modules. Let me describe two objects in this left monodromic category. In KB of S-bim quotient, I had this object TS, which was R goes to B, S goes to R, using multiplication and co-multiplication. Okay. Now, in this left monodromic world, So I'm sort of telling you what this category looks like without actually defining it. Here is an object in this category. Instead of just saying that this composition, so this composition was multiplication by alpha s, which if you just brutally quotient by pass to k, then it becomes zero. But now you can say, you can remember that it was alpha s. And you indicate it like this. Maybe a minus sign. Okay. Here's yet another object in this category. You can take R goes to BS goes to, oh, I think I need more room. So this object is now for SL3, and there are two simple reflections, S and T. And these maps are, here is co-multiplication for S, followed by multiplication in S, and then co-multiplication in T. And finally, I have multiplication for T. And you can again record the way in which this composition is only zero after you kill higher polynomials. So this composition of multiplication and co-multiplication was alpha s, and then I have leftover co-multiplication for t. And this composition here is I have a alpha t. And you actually have to go a step further. So you can think of what's going on in this passage to this more refined quotient is I'm recording using the Kozyu resolution, the way in which something is zero. Whereas here, you only have to go back one term in the Kozyu resolution. Here, you really have to go back two terms. If you compute what d squared is with these additional components of the differential, you find that there's another term you need to add, alpha s wedge alpha t times the identity. Okay. So this is, if you take the Kozyu resolution, for SL3, looks like this. Now I'm having to find something all the way up here to record the choice of these lifts somehow, still has some information. So I'm already out of time, so let me I'll end right now, but I said why these free monodromic sheaves are necessary, but didn't say anything about what they look like. So let me draw you what this free monodromic lift of Ts looks like for a simple reflection S. And this is a category whose objects have even more components in the differential. Things that I won't bother to define, but it's a left monodromic complex together with some additional data that says that certain operations are null homotopic, And so this object admits some lift to a free monogenic complex. OK, I'll end there.
Are there any questions?
Your title had Kasmidi groups, but you
didn't. Sorry?
Your title had Kasmidi groups.
Yes, so.
Get there. So what's.
Right. So the story is that, right, in characteristic zero for Kasmidi groups, this result was all known. So this is due to Professor Kovnikov and Yun. And they also use some a category of what they call free monogenic sheaves and were motivated by that story. But there's a, so you can understand our work as giving some other more combinatorial model for this free monogenic category. And so this construction really generalizes to any coefficient field and even for a Kasmidi group. So you can really work with, instead of these Zorgol bimodules, you can work with actual parity sheaves on Kasmidi groups and define such a monoidal category.
And that works even characteristic zero?
Yes, yeah, this works characteristic zero and recovers much of their result. Yeah?
Is there some kind of conjectural representation theoretic interpretation of this?
Right, so the a big motivation for developing this quasi-duality in for both modular and Kasmidi was that you apply this to the affine flag variety. And so there's, in fact, some parabolic singular version of this quasi-duality, which we also prove. And then this mixed-derived category there. The following is a theorem now, that this gives you a grading on the principal block of representations of algebraic group, reductive group, over that characteristic.
In the Kasmidi case.
Sorry?
This is in the fine dimensional case or in the Kasmidi case?
This is the Kasmidi case. This is the analog of.
In the category that you're working with, what would be this? Oh, so you're doing the fine case.
Yeah. So this is like ABG.
You get the,
this is like ABG with positive coefficients.
So for general Kasmidi, this doesn't have any interpretation.
I'm not sure.
Any other questions? Yeah, so let's thank the speakers again.
Informal question, anybody can help Lacey physics?
In characteristic V?
No, in characteristic zero.
In characteristic zero, this is exactly this, this is the example of this categorical split equality.
What about the monoidal category?
So the monoid category is additional structure to have there, which
have some physics.
Well, I mean, this is related to these, like, the shuffling and the twisting, which we discuss from time to time, right? So, I mean, maybe another way to say this, right, is, in the sort of symplectic duality picture, you have this natural monoidal category of Harishchandra bimodules acting on category O, which is, I think if you say it in terms of A brains, it's like A brains and the product that aren't too far away from the diagonal. Somehow it seems that under this S duality, Harishchandra bimodules on one side commute with Harishchandra bimodules on the other side. But another question you might ask is when you sort of send things through the duality, like the kind of natural bimodules that act, like in the quiver variety picture, this is the Nakajima's action of U of G, right? Where do those get sent on the dual side? And this is, in this particular case, this is sort of the answer, that they go to this like action of this free monodromic things. So somehow this free monodromic stuff, this should be some other manifestation of like this Whitaker stuff that you guys like so much. It should somehow have a similar flavor to that. Because
what about
that.
Fine story?
Hmm?
What about the fine story?
What about affine? Oh, well, don't ask me about affine.
And in fact, this, it's, I mean, in the end, this is all sort of combinatorial algebraic. So even we use help from geometry at some points, but there should be such a Kozyu duality for, I mean, it's already known for any finite Coxeter group, for example. There's no geometry. And maybe even for an arbitrary Coxeter system.
Formally speaking, the affine story comes from the 40n equals 2 theory reduced on a holomorphic circle. It's got the loop group of everything in the 3D type of story.
Ah, okay.
But I don't know if that's... Then the line operators maybe come from surface operators or something like that. Not sure.
Somehow you also mentioned the parabolic case where you lose the monoidal structure. Oh, right.
Yeah, you lose the monoidal structure, yes.
So, I mean, the question was about monoidal structure. So, I mean, it's like a very special situation for monoidal structure.
Yeah.
So
because
parabolic singular duality, then you don't have monoidal structure there.
Because usually in usual symplectic duality, do tiltings play a role? There is a simples and projectives. They could.
I mean, somehow they're right. There's this.
I mean, there's a Ringel duality, but
yeah,
that,
there's Ringel duality in the picture. So whether you want to set up simples going to tiltings or simple goings to,
I mean, the problem
is just a matter of taste.
It's a matter of taste for finite flag variety, for example. But for affine, you really need this. Yeah, you really got to use the tiltings.
Well, you guys prefer tiltings.
Well, I mean,
you
do
right?
have simplest version. I mean, how is it called? Archetype of duality, which is sort of duality between negative and positive level, which is like a sense tilting.
Yeah.